Hi, welcome to the Morbid Anatomy Transmission. I'm your host, Molly McBride Jacobson. Today I have a little bit of a winter cold, so please excuse this nasally voice. Earlier this week I spoke with Stephen Vizecki, a musician and producer who will be presenting an event at the Morbid Anatomy on Kraftwerk, Saturday the 12th from 8 to 11. If you're like me and don't know what Kraftwerk is, you would be surprised on how much it influences your life. They were a 1970s German electronic band, some people even say the first electronic band, and they basically laid ground for almost all music that would come after them. If that kind of thing interests you, that kind of thing being music, stay tuned.
But I also, I studied European history in college, I learned a lot about, German history in the 20th century and all about the Weimar Republic and how that was sort of a tragic, World War II was sort of a tragic end to, the creativity that was existent in Germany, in the 20s and 30s, in Germany in the 20s and 30s, there was Fritz Lang and there was, in psychology, there was, Freud and Jung and all these different disciplines. There were sort of these very influential figures that had, a lot of influence on culture in the 20th century, but never really became super famous. So Kraftwerk sort of ties into that historical memory, and that's something that's always sort of fascinated me about them.
Cool. If you don't mind, could you just give an explanation of what Kraftwerk is for somebody who's totally uninitiated?
They were they sort of started out in Germany in the early 70s. There was sort of a German version of progressive rock, sort of, in the post Beatles era, just rock music sort of exploded. And in America and England in the early 70s, there were these sort of progressive bands. They were doing sort of interesting stuff. And then in Germany, there was a version of that. And so there was Tangerine Dream, Can, and then Kraftwerk were also one of these krautrock bands, the sort of band
krautrock?
That were just sort of, yeah, it was called, that was the scene in Germany.
And it's called that presumably because it's German?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of a label slapped on it by journalists.
A little bit derogatory, presumably.
Yeah, I guess just because, journalists in America and England couldn't, some of them probably thought it was silly that Germany even had a music scene, or because there hadn't been much rock music that came out of Germany in the 50s and 60s. So just the whole idea of it seemed kind of faintly absurd. Hmm. So that was sort of why they jokingly called it krautrock. So the German bands sort of couldn't really, rock out as hard as, or they weren't as technically gifted as some of the musicians in England and America, like Jimi Hendrix or, Eric Clapton, and these kind of shredding guitarists. So they sort of focused more on, using new technology, using synthesizers and production techniques and sequencers and sort of focus more on developing the concept of electronic music within this sort of jammy psychedelic context.
It's interesting that with a little bit of reading that I've done, it seems like they're grouped in with a punk scene. But they're pretty aesthetically very clean cut. Could you describe them a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is that they were sort of middle class people. I guess, the clean-cut image came from just sort of they sort of had this disgust at, bands like the Eagles, sort of hard rock bands like Aerosmith or the Eagles, who had this kind of phony image, they felt. And a way to rebel against that. Yeah, just sort of everything about them just goes contrary to what you think of as a pop star. Just they're very kind of cerebral and geeky, Yeah, they never had managers, and they were never really tied into, and they were never really sort of, they're not friendly, you know. You know, like the Monkees or the Beatles or bands like that, you know, they didn't go on TV shows ever. So sort of everything they do sort of runs counter to showbiz. And that's something I was, you know, admired about them. It's just that they just seem to be doing their own thing. People seem to respond to it.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned the Monkees and the Beatles, because in looking at pictures of Kraftwerk, they seem to be sort of satirically styling themselves, maybe like sort of tongue-in-cheek after bands like that, because they're all, you know, dressed the same, they look identical, but they style themselves after automatons. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think part of that is just they're sort of showing how society is controlled. And so, you know, I think in the 70s, you had a lot of bands that were sort of, you know, would just get up there and play, and they wanted to sort of poke fun at this cult of individuality, you know, and fans sort of believing that these, you know, rock bands are just doing, you know, exactly what they want to do and are not anybody's tools or anything. And so they just wanted to throw the curtain open and show that everything can be controlled. But, yeah, it's not totally, I think it just works more on this kind of subconscious level also. And it's, you know, hard to explain, really.
Sure. Everything that I read talked so much about how influential they were on electronic music and basically all music that followed.
Yeah.
So much so to the point that listening to them, it's almost even difficult to parse out their influence because they sort of set the standard. So can you give some examples of their influence?
Yeah, I mean, the first one was, you know, David Bowie. You know, in the 70s, David Bowie was a huge, huge star. And so, you know, he was always getting interviewed. And he would talk about them a lot. And so when bands, you know, like when OMD and Depeche Mode were just teenagers, you know, they would just watch Top of the Pops, and David Bowie would be on there talking about how he liked Kraftwerk, were like this amazing futuristic group. And you know, and so it was like even David Bowie, you know, who's like a grot god, you know, sort of thinks like Kraftwerk are even above Bowie, you know. And then so that's sort of what made, you know, those new wave bands sort of get interested in this music. Because I think, you know, at that time they really wanted to do something new and not be the same as this kind of, you know, pompous 70s, you know, singer-songwriter kind of stuff. I guess it was sort of obvious that electronic music was going to be the next exciting thing in pop music. It was sort of like Bowie was like this oracle, you know, showing the way forward. So that's the main conduit. And then I think also like their futurism and their sort of science fiction style was a big influence on sort of urban music, like African-American or techno artists from Detroit and Chicago and New York in the 80s would sort of hear Kraftwerk. It just, a lot of them were sort of into futurism because they were sort of wanted to sort of escape the, you know, bleak urban landscape of the 80s. So that, I think that's what appealed to them about Kraftwerk, was just their sort of futurism and sort of science fiction kind of, so it's sort of science fiction escapism, I think. Like, it sort of appealed to people who were into, you know, science fiction and futurism.
Yeah, definitely. So the Morbid Anatomy mostly does stuff that relates to, like, history and death, and in large part it's stuff that focuses on, like, the Victorian era or even before. So it seems like Kraftwerk are a little bit at odds with that. How do you see Kraftwerk fitting into the Morbid Anatomy's motto of death, beauty, and that which falls between the cracks?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Morbid Anatomy, people who, you know, drawn to Morbid Anatomy, you know, would be interested in what Kraftwerk were doing, just in that they, you know, I guess what one link between Kraftwerk and Morbid Anatomy is that, you know, they sort of had this air of tragedy to them. Cult bands typically, you know, have an air of tragedy to them because they never got any of the rock and roll glory, you know?
Yeah.
And they seem to be sort of cut off from society, and they were disconnected from other people. And so this is what, you know, forced them to express themselves through music. So that's, you know, I feel like that's kind of that conception of the artist is kind of 19th century.
Yeah. I mean, it also, I mean, their, you know, imagining of the future is kind of dark in itself too, you know, computer love, like that sort of thing. Like it's a little bit sad, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel, they're sort of like Nietzschean in that they're just like, they stare straight at the truth and they're not afraid to say it, you know? Yeah, and then also just sort of their retro futurism, like they use a lot of retro imagery. You know, I've read all the books about Kraftwerk, all the biographies and all the little videos and interviews where people talk about them. And, you know, I've just sort of been studying them for, you know, 25 years or something. And so I think I'm well equipped to just sort of show everybody, like, not only the history, but sort of like a fun side to them and how they, you know, what it might be like to have been in their shoes, you know, in Germany in the 70s and 80s, you know, and cover a bit of the human side of them. Because it's impossible because, you know, Ralph and Florian, they almost never reveal anything about who they are in interviews. So, you know, it's kind of difficult to know. So I think that's a fun thing about them is you can sort of discover them for yourself. So that's what I aim to do.
Yeah, and there's a dance party after the event, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to have, I've been editing together my own videos that'll go along with lecture. So that'll be good. And then I'll sort of dovetail in with the DJ dance party portion of the event. So Joe Garten is going to DJ. And I met him at a Kraftwerk tribute event that coincided with the 2012 MoMA concerts.
How does one dance to Kraftwerk?
I'm hoping that people will sort of watch YouTube videos and, you know, to learn a little bit about, like, break dancing and electro kind of robot dancing, you know. But you can also do disco dancing.
Yeah.
You know, it's really up to you, you know.
Okay, cool. I mean, I'm going to study up.
I guess another thing, the connection with Morbid Anatomy there's another thing about Kraftwerk is that they're sort of built for longevity, you know, so there's this sort of morbid kind of aspect to what they're doing, you know, like there's sort of like the robots are sort of creating it so that the robots can play concerts, you know, after the actual members of the band are dead. So it's kind of like a Frankenstein thing or something, and so they're sort of like trying to like cheat death.
That's it for this transmission. Thank you so much for listening. The Kraftwerk lecture is going to be followed by a Kraftwerk dance party, so, you know, oil up those hinges and bust out your moves on Saturday night. As I mentioned at the top, Steven is a musician, and you can listen to his original stuff at soundcloud.com/Steven-Vizecki. I'll include a link to that in the description as well. If this episode piqued your interest in Kraftwerk, which I hope it did, I'm going to include two of their songs recommended by Steven for fans of the Morbid Anatomy after the last words, so keep listening. December's kind of a slow month for the Morbid Anatomy event-wise, but there is a holiday flea market from noon to 6 p.m. on the 13th at the Bell House. I went to the last one and got myself some beautiful vintage teeth and a sweet, sweet taxidermied little baby bunny. Go and find your stocking stuffers before all the good stuff is gone. Today's last words come from drummer Buddy Rich. While he was being prepped for the surgery he would ultimately die in, a nurse asked him if there was anything he couldn't take. He responded, "Yeah, country music."
Change themselves in the looking glass. even the greatest star live their lives in the looking glass. Even the greatest stars live their lives in the looking glass. The greatest.